is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The House of Representatives now has the budget mega bill that narrowly passed the Senate on Tuesday. Speaker Mike Johnson says he's confident it will pass and soon be on President Trump's desk. Brian Kohberger expected in court today to change his not guilty plea to guilty in the murder of four University of Idaho students in 2022. ABC legal analyst Shanna Lloyd says he is expected to get four life sentences without the possibility of parole.
The prosecution and the defendant are going to agree to the terms. Once this agreement is reached, it still has to be submitted to the judge, and the judge must approve it. If the judge does not find that it's satisfactory, he can reject the plea deal. And so that's what this hearing is for.
Back at it today in New York, the jury in hip-hop mogul Sean Combs' trial. Jurors telling the judge they have decided on four of the five counts. Lululemon is suing Costco, alleging the company is producing nearly identical clothing products and selling them for a fraction of the price. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Today, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is scheduled to release written opinions on a case that involves a statewide ban on abortion written in 1849. The much-anticipated ruling seeks to bring clarity to whether the 176-year-old law should be enforced in Wisconsin. A lawsuit challenging the ban was filed by State Attorney General Josh Call after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2023. Wisconsin's High Court has a 4-3 liberal majority. The ruling is expected to be released after 8 a.m. this morning. The U.S. Senate passed its budget bill dubbed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Senator Ron Johnson said that the bill helps avoid a $4 trillion tax increase and provides additional funding for border security and defense. Senator Tammy Baldwin says the bill is going to drop 700,000 Wisconsin residents from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program known as SNAP. The bill would also remove health care from hundreds of thousands of Wisconsin residents. The final vote in the Senate was 51-50, with Vice President J.D. Vance providing the tie-breaking vote. The bill still has to go through the House of Representatives before it can be signed into law. One La Crosse County beach is closed for the holiday week, while two others have warning signs posted about elevated bacteria levels. According to the county's health department, Airport Beach is closed for swimming due to high levels of E. coli. In addition, warning signs are posted at Bluebird Springs Campground and Black River Beach. Since the county's last update in mid-June, all eight of the county's beaches have seen increases in E. coli, although for five of the eight beaches, the levels remain below the threshold needed for a warning or closure. Thursday's Finance and Personnel Committee meeting will set the table for next Thursday's Common Council meeting. The committee will take action on the La Crosse Regional Airport's operating budget to help with two capital projects. It will also consider approving the first three phases of the Chalmers, a multi-purpose development on the site of the former La Crosse Tribune building. Other action items include funding for repairs to the roof of the La Crosse Center, legal funds for the Town of Campbell's incorporation petition, and five-year planning. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Let's play two. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers and the Mets rained out last night in New York, so the two teams playing a doubleheader today at 16-9. Milwaukee, the hottest team in the National League for the month of June. I asked Sal Frelick, does he feel confident about the crew right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we kind of came together almost about a month and a half ago now, and I think we kind of identified we maybe weren't playing our culture, our brand of baseball, and we fixed that pretty quickly, and good things started to happen. So as long as we can control that, I think we'll be in a good spot.
NBA, the Bucks land Pacers center Miles Turner in free agency, but release Damian Lillard. They'll pay Lillard $22.5 million per year for the next 5 years. So what does Giannis think?
Sources that relayed to me that Giannis Antetokounmpo is not pleased with the Bucks' decision to buy out Damian Lillard for the remainder of his contract. He just didn't like how it was handled. And so I was told that he is not pleased with what transpired with Damian Lillard.
That's Chris Hayes of the NBA Network. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have a slight chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm late this afternoon and again tonight. Otherwise, mostly sunny today with a high right around 87 this afternoon. Tonight will drop down to the mid-60s. Tomorrow, sunshine, scattered storms, high of 87. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 67.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Pat Kreitlow and Trigvi Olsen will join us to discuss breaking news as it continues on the state budget and in Washington. Plus, what's worse? Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for The Todd Alba Show.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday morning, July 2nd, 2025. Parker Olson's down in Madison in Studio A2. We'll chat with him again in just a little bit. And we have a guest, State Representative Angela Stroud, who will be joining us shortly as well. Brittany Merlot is off today, so keep listening to your favorite Civic Media radio station throughout the day for updates on your local forecast. But let me tell you who else is coming up along the network today. Coming up after this fine program is a finer program, Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair and Greg Bach. Dan Schaefer will be appearing there at 9:30 this morning to talk about the state budget agreement. A little after 10 a.m., they will be joined by Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Do you remember the Oprah Winfrey joke? Was it Dave Letterman that told it when he was hosting the Oscars and talking about Uma Thurman? Oprah? That's kind of me with Darren Von Ruden and Derek Van Orden. You don't want to get those two confused. They could not be more opposite in their... One is actually dedicated to farmers and improving the rural economy of Wisconsin. The other's a member of Congress. On the Todd Alba Show, I will join Todd at 2 o'clock along with Trigvi Olsen from the Lincoln Project. And then the Maggie Dawn Show, a special edition at 4 o'clock today called Freedom Under Attack, including guests David Volker, a UW Green Bay professor of humanities and history, Howard Schweber, a UW professor of American politics and political theory, and at 5:06, Kathy Kramer, UW professor and chair of letters and science in American politics. And then finally, Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe from 6 to 8 tonight includes a visit with Milwaukee film critic Matt Mueller and director Wendy Schneider. All of that ahead across the Civic Media Radio Network. Brewers were rained out yesterday, so there is a doubleheader today. Two games with the New York Mets, and it's a split doubleheader. So tune in at 11:35 this morning for pregame, for the makeup game, game one of the series with the Mets, and then 5:35 tonight for game two when Jacob Mizorowski will be pitching. Freddie Peralta is doing the opening game, again, pregame at 11:35. When we originally booked State Representative Angela Stroud from the Ashland area, it was because she had to vote no on a bill that was purportedly going to help with the removal of lead water service lines in the Superior area, but there were strings attached. Since that time, since we booked her as a guest, there have been some very positive developments in that area, and so we're very happy to welcome Angela to the program now to tell us what's the latest in Superior. We'll talk about the whole range of the problem and the different ways you could address it, and hopefully a way that works out best for all parties concerned. Angela Stroud, how are you? Good morning.
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So that's kind of, you know, the setup was there was this bill and you weren't thoroughly happy with it. But what has happened, you know, since the bill was being considered in the legislature?
Yeah, so this bill would change state law to give the last private water utility, Superior Water, Light and Power, access to public money to replace lead service lines. And the way that the Republicans who introduced the legislation seem to think about it is, let's just change state law and no big deal. For me, it's a really big deal when we change state law, especially giving a for-profit private company access to public dollars. So my thinking the whole time was, well, what is it? What's in it for the customers of Superior? How do we get the best deal possible for them? And I had some concerns. So one of my biggest concerns was the cost of replacement. The company was citing an average cost of replacement that was twice the statewide average. And even though they would get access to public money, customers would still be left with 25% of that cost. So when you have what seemed to be an inflated cost, then the remainder is passed on to customers and we're giving public money to a private company. It just wasn't good enough. We needed something in return, a better deal. And so for the last few months, I've been working really hard to try to figure out a deal between the company and the city of Superior. And we didn't have a deal when the bill went to the floor. So I was a no vote. And until we got a deal, I was going to stay a no, and I was going to encourage the governor to veto it. But on one of the last possible days, we got a deal.
Yes, you did. And did not, you know, just accept what was given to you in the form of a bill, because I'm sure you're aware, voting no on a bill that purports to help your own constituents, whether we like it or not, that's something that people from the opposing party would try to use as a club and beat you over the head with it. She voted no against removing lead water lines in her own district, but you were looking for a better deal. And so you feel now that this agreement that goes along with it, how did that go? Did you find willing participants? Was it a smooth process? Who all deserves, you know, credit for making this happen?
Yeah. So on the first point, it's clear that there were political dynamics at play about trying to target me. And so we can dig into that if you want. But to the good news, what really happened was, you know, the city and the utility, they have a long history, way before any of us were born. But the current leadership, you know, they've had some things happen where there wasn't a whole lot of trust. And so there was an interest in getting the bill from the utility. And the city, as I engaged more and more with the city, they started to sort of come around to the idea that there could be a benefit for the city as well. So my job really was to try to get these two entities who weren't really on great terms to build trust and get to a place where they could both see the win-win. And so I spent a lot of time with both parties, really kind of talking through how I saw the issue, how I saw the benefits, listening to them, trying to address some of their concerns. And you know, that took time, but now I think trust has been built and a relationship has formed and a partnership has formed. And really who wins are the people in the city of Superior who now don't have an average out-of-pocket cost of $2,500 each. So for me, that's a huge win. And we turned a real potential sort of liability into something that is a massive benefit for the city.
Were the Republicans who were behind the bill that was eventually, you know, passed and signed, would they count among the willing partners in negotiating a better deal for homeowners, or were they just hoping the law would be signed and that would be it?
I honestly don't think they had any idea about any of it. Like, I don't think they knew what the implications were for the public. I don't think they knew, for example, that the city has an interest in acquiring the utility. I don't know if they knew that the city council voted down a proposal of support for the bill. Like, there's just so much that goes into a change like this. But to be a good representative, you have to be on the ground asking questions and, most importantly, listening. And it was just very clear to me they weren't aware of any of the dynamics. They just thought, well, this is simple. Let's change this law and give the company access to money. I don't think, you know, we should ever act that way when we're changing state law, and especially when we're talking about giving public money to a for-profit company.
Yeah. I mean, there is a real difference in whether your representative or state senator is on the ground in that particular area. We're talking to State Representative Angela Stroud from the 73rd Assembly District in that area, where you and all manner of other legislators will be looking at this new state budget agreement. And I want to ask you about that. But actually, before I forget, I did want to come back and ask about the history of all of this, because I know Earl Ingram in Milwaukee reminds us about this all the time. When we talk about lead water service lines, so many people think of it as some kind of Milwaukee-only problem. And this whole episode really serves to remind us that there are places all over the state where this is an issue. I had no idea it was this big of an issue in Superior until this came up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about the new maps and more diverse representation around the state is we need to realize that in a lot of ways, my district has more in common with Milwaukee than with other parts of the state, and certainly more in common with Milwaukee than suburban areas. Because I really think the distinction isn't urban versus rural. I think it's urban and rural versus the suburbs, because the suburbs are new construction, which, not no surprise, our entire shared revenue formula is about new construction. They get tons of resources, tons of advantages, but these older cities, and that's really what this is about, older cities with old infrastructure, and in some cases, shrinking populations, another thing that Milwaukee and my district have in common, we have different challenges. So, you know, Ashland and Superior, these are really, really old cities. And as a result, we need infusions of dollars to replace infrastructure of all kinds, including lead lines. And this is, brings me up another point, though, taking money from this public pool, you know, that's serious business, because we're taking from cities like Milwaukee or other cities. And so that's just another reason to tread carefully in a decision like this and not to treat it like it's just something simplistic.
That's right. Alicia writes on YouTube. Oops, sorry. Let's get this one here. We've got the lead water service lines in Kimberly as well. And again, you've got in Superior and Milwaukee, you've got these ports on Great Lakes with the infrastructure that is, you know, tied into that to a degree, you know, in past history. And it's good to be mindful of, you know, the whole range of the problem before you just immediately accept what is given to you by, say, the private sector. So, again, getting back to my next question of you having to meet with the full assembly and consider the state budget deal, and I have been going over all the details of it, it is most definitely going to get a wide array of Democrats for and against and Republicans for and against. Probably going to be the most bipartisan, the raw bipartisan vote on a budget we've seen in a long time. How are you feeling about it right now?
I'm still digging in. I mean, unfortunately, this process has been totally rushed. This isn't how we should do good government. The party of chaos continues to be the party of chaos, forcing really just bad governance practices. So, you know, I'm up early in part, not just for this, but because I'm still digging into the budget. I have super big concerns about public school funding in particular. I mean, by not raising general aid, what we're doing is putting more pressure on property taxes yet again. So it's kind of crazy to me that we would be touting that this budget has tax cuts at the same time that by refusing to raise general aid for schools, local school districts are going to have to raise property taxes to meet their levy. So this a tax cut in one pocket and then raising taxes in the other pocket, really, we have to ask, what is the net benefit and to whom? And for working and middle class people, it's not actually going to net out to a tax cut or to a benefit. And meanwhile, schools are the ones who are going to be blamed for having to raise their revenues through property taxes. So yet again, the state legislature is failing to meet the needs of public schools. And it's just super disappointing that we're having this conversation yet again.
So you think that the conversations will continue for folks who think that this budget just didn't go far enough to urge Governor Evers to just veto the whole thing, even though he worked out the deal, but there are people that would still like to just scrap this and try again?
I mean, that would be my position. That is my position, mm-hmm. that we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't sign a bill into law that actually harms communities. I mean, it's really hard to undo 15 years of neglect of public schools in one budget. I understand that. But by refusing to increase general aid, we're just contributing to the problem yet again. So yeah, there is a small increase in special ed. That's huge. That's helpful. But you have to think about public school budgets as multifaceted. It's not just one thing. And when you have a big problem, it takes big solutions, not just fixing one part of the problem.
We are talking to State Representative Angela Stroud from the Ashland area, 73rd Assembly District, about things that are happening up there. A local update is coming up next for some of you, and then when we're all back together in 15 minutes, we will be talking to a retired pediatric nurse and school board member about her letter to the WIAA, critical of their new restrictions on transgender sports participation. So stick around for that. And then in our next hour, we will be talking to Earl Ingram and Melissa Baldoff with our climate check. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Eagle 1490 AM.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You want to feel important.
You want to be part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things.
You want to feel like you belong.
We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it.
We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers.
We are normal people just like you. But our part-time service in the Army National Guard means we get to be more.
When our communities are in need, we get the chance to stand up and do something about it.
We get to serve in our own region and help the people we call neighbors.
From the lake shores of Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota.
The fertile fields of Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa to the wide open plains of North and South Dakota.
We are here for our hometowns.
And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
All right, Brittany Merlot is off today, but Robin Tigerton, he does not take a day off. Good morning from Tigerton, he writes on YouTube. It's sunny and 65 degrees. Yesterday, I mowed 7 yards in Tigerton. One of my customers gave me a sub sandwich and a bottle of Gatorade. Today, I have mowing jobs in Wittenberg. I'm scheduled to be doing tomorrow, so I don't have to mow on the 4th of July. It is going to be a hot one on the 4th of July. He said yesterday he was going to have lasagna, but one of his customers gave me a sub sandwich, which was better on a warm day. It is, in fact, Lasagna Awareness Month, and we'll probably talk about that tomorrow. And he mentions a day-night doubleheader is something you don't often see in Major League Baseball nowadays. There was a time when they played a lot of doubleheaders, especially on Sundays. Yeah, I remember those very well. I loved bonus baseball that way. But instead, the bonus baseball comes accidentally, like it does today. Brewers and Mets, after last night's game was rained out, 11:35 this morning for the pregame on Game 1. Freddie Peralta will be pitching for the Brewers versus the Mets. And then come on back at 5:35 this evening for game two, and that will be Jacob Mizorowski pitching for the Brewers against the Mets, all here on stations belonging to the Civic Media Radio Network. Let's continue now with State Representative Angela Stroud from the Ashland area, who, so that leads me, I'm going to ask about, you know, the Northland College closing in a moment here, but it also notes in your bio that you have a described as a very antisocial rescue border collie named May, the cutest dog of all time. What's the update since the election and all the campaigning? Any less antisocial?
No, she still will destroy anyone who tries to come up our driveway. But she's so sweet. Once she knows you and feels comfortable that you're not an intruder, then she's great. So yeah, you know, the one thing is every time I pack a suitcase, she knows what's happening and she's not happy about it. So that's been hard. Being away from the dog has been a hard part of this job.
And you make the big drive from Ashland down to Madison for this. Yeah. Who was I was serving with Gary Sherman from Port Wing for all those years, talking about, you know, those drives, and they are not easy. Wouldn't it be great if we had a train system in the state?
But God, I'd love it.
That's a whole different thing. So with the closing of Northland College up there and you and all the other educators up there who have been part of the community, I don't have any happy way to ask this, just to ask how the community has been in the weeks since the closure.
You know, when a college closes for summer, it feels kind of like normal. But the difference is, you know, the grass is getting a little taller and we all know that people aren't coming back for the first time in 132 years. So it's challenging. It's difficult. We have a core group of people who are trying to figure out uses for the campus. There's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm about that idea. You know, it continues to be a bit unclear what the board is thinking in terms of how they're going to move forward with the campus. So there's a lot of uncertainty, but there's a lot of potential still. And, you know, one of the things I've been trying to do is help figure out how to transform this into an opportunity that could be great for the community.
Mm-hmm. There's a theme that you sounded and that was sounded yesterday as well when it came to the budget deal that folks will be voting on today. And that is that this whole notion of fair maps led us to a fair budget. Not a great budget, maybe not even a very good budget, but, you know, a fair budget, which would not have happened without fair maps. And, I mean, you can truly testify to that in an area where the last set of rigged maps meant that in a heavily Democratic area along the south shore of Lake Superior there, there was no Democratic district, no Democratic representation there. You've been in office now for 6 months or so. How different does it feel for your constituents up there to have a voice again?
Oh, they're so happy. They're so happy. I mean, if you look at, you know, national elections, if you look at the last presidential going back decades, you'll see Douglas County, Bayfield County, Ashland County, they always go blue. And in some Bayfield County, it's not even close. So the idea that there wasn't a single state representative north of Eau Claire prior to these new maps just shows the degree of gerrymandering. And, you know, there's some spiteful Republicans who say this map is gerrymandered. Depending on how you carve it up, you know, we could have more than one Democrat up here. That would be considered fair, depending on how you drew the boundaries. I happen to love the shape of my district, South Shore of Lake Superior. There's a real logic to that. We have a lot in common when you think about the Lake Shore. So I hope the shape of my district never changes. I love the city of Superior all the way to the Bad River Reservation. But I understand if it were to change to make sure that Democratic representation reflects the actual distribution of the population. That's not a crazy concept. That's exactly what we should have in a democracy. But my constituents, I should show you some emails I get. They are just so pleased to have someone who is really representing them and who's spending a lot of time in the district trying to understand their perspective and then fight in Madison for what they need.
Oh, I know. And not to reminisce too much, but I mean, when, you know, my first year career was at a radio station in Rice Lake, and the brand new legislators in that area were Bob Jauch and Mary Hubler. And I started this talk show in Rice Lake, and they were among my most frequent guests because they were brand new legislators themselves and wanted to, you know, have a voice all over the district that would serve. And of course, you kept, as I mentioned, Gary Sherman and Janet Bewley and all kinds of folks who, shall we say, quite fairly represented, you know, the wide range of the areas there, and did so fairly and with a true sense of service. So the budget will probably wrap up this week. What's your first order of business when it's all done?
Getting on the boat and being on Lake Superior. Fourth of July, that's what I plan to do.
That is the correct answer. Yes, you are really good at this. You have simply got to unplug now and then, especially after what you managed to do to help out the homeowners in Superior, removing their lead water service lines. State Representative Angela Stroud, thank you so much for the visit. We really appreciate it. Thanks for all you do.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. And when we come back, we will talk about the WIAA and its transgender policy on sports participation in Wisconsin high schools, and then have much more in our 8 o'clock hour, including our climate check with Melissa Baldoff. A reminder, you can sign up for our newsletters at Up North News. Just head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click on subscribe up in the top banner of the homepage. We'd love to have you as a subscriber there. More coming up right after this break and the Midwest Farm Report. You're up north.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Just like your lawn or garden, our Wisconsin cranberry crop loves this weather. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. That's the word we're getting from Allison Johnjack. She's UW-Madison's Extension Cranberry Outreach Specialist. She's keeping an eye on the cranberry crop right now because it is in peak bloom.
Seeing peak bloom and kind of moving on through the blossom into fruit set season. And we're seeing so far this year, surprisingly low insect pressure. We're also seeing a really good blossom set, but we are seeing weather conditions that aren't the pollinators' very favorite weather conditions. So we're hopeful that our pollinators are getting enough work done despite the uncooperative weather for them.
Allison Johnjack, Wisconsin's cranberry outreach specialist and a gal that's keeping her eye on that high-value crop. Remember, if those pollinators cooperate and Wisconsin's got a good cranberry set, then we can look forward to being the top producer of cranberries in the United States for the 21st year.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rural Mutual Insurance is a proud sponsor of the Wisconsin State Fair. As a thank you for your support, they're giving away State Fair tickets. Visit ruralmutual.com/win and enter to win State Fair tickets.
Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
As a young person in agriculture, I wondered how I could make a difference in my community. But then I found Wisconsin Farm Bureau's Young Farmer and Agriculturist program. It's more than a group. It's a chance to connect with others, grow as a leader, and advocate for agriculture. Together, we're shaping the future of farming in Wisconsin. Be a part of something big. Join us today.
A voice for farmers, a vision for agriculture, Wisconsin Farm Bureau.
And it may not be a farm bill, but the big, beautiful bill that's currently being debated in Washington, D.C., has some key elements that Wisconsin farmers and commodity groups are keeping an eye on. So far, included in the measure passed by the Senate are updated reference prices that farmers use throughout several different programs, also improved crop insurance coverage, help for livestock producers, and some support for key export programs that agriculture depends on. Then there are the tax benefits that are currently included, with immediate expensing of farm equipment, a small business tax break, an increase in the estate tax exemption, and an improved 45Z clean fuel credit. Now we'll see what happens in discussion at the House. I'm Pam Yonke.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have a slight chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm late this afternoon and again tonight. Otherwise, mostly sunny today with a high right around 87 this afternoon. Tonight, we'll drop down to the mid-60s. Tomorrow, sunshine, scattered storms, high of 87. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 67.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Maggie Dawn.
Join us this Wednesday for our special early July 4th episode, digging deep on today's attacks on our freedoms. Defending civil rights isn't optional. It's our shared obligation. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
.735 now on these mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. On the text line, Tom in Hartford, another great guest, Pat. It's uplifting to hear an intelligent, caring representative. Ain't it, though? It's just nice and refreshing when you get that compared to some of the things that you see out there in the news cycle. This is going to be a big day in Madison, not just because the legislature's meeting on the budget, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court has announced that today it will release its decision on its interpretation of an 1849 statute that some had purported to be an abortion ban. Others interpreted it as doing something else about protecting pregnant women. The law has been on hold since a Dane County judge ruled, I believe in the fall of 2023, that the law did not apply to consensual abortions. It was appealed to the state Supreme Court. And the state Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case last November and is now ready to issue its ruling. And so that will come sometime today. So keep it tuned to your favorite shows across the Civic Media Radio Network to learn more. Let's turn now to a matter in our schools about participation in sports and other activities, and especially as it relates to members of the transgender community. That we're going to meet with a guest from the Baraboo area who is a retired pediatric nurse, sits on the school board, but is going to join us in a private capacity, and wrote a letter to the WIAA expressing concerns about a policy that restricts transgender student athletes to participate only in the sports categories corresponding to their sex assigned at birth. So let's learn more about that and what perhaps might be a better way forward with Carolyn Bonanno, who joins us now from Baraboo. Carolyn, good morning. Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm good. It's frustrating, but good.
It does sound frustrating. You note in your letter to the members of the board of the Wisconsin Interscholastic Activities Association that their policy fails to account for current scientific understanding and may not serve the best interests of all student athletes. And you say this as a retired registered pediatric nurse and somebody who has certainly followed school matters carefully on school boards. So can you talk a bit more about, you know, what prompted the letter and then, you know, basically your overview of the policies that prompted the letter?
Because I am on a board and I learned about this, and I had been hearing rumblings, and I always heard that, well, this isn't true, that they shouldn't, it's not scientifically sound. And so I decided to do some of my own research because facts seem to be able to speak louder than feelings, and I think it's important. So I looked it up and I tried to find things that said that transgender women had an ability over other female athletes, and there was very little evidence to that at all. And as my brother said to me the other day, this whole thing, it just seems to be a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. And I think that it puts our most vulnerable students at higher risk and So I just felt it was so wrong. And it's kind of like the first steps to dictatorship. If this happened immediately after Trump wrote his letter, his executive order banning transgender females, and this only and WIA's policy only refers to transgender females. It doesn't look at anything else. I don't think they did any research whatsoever. They just followed along. They were in lockstep.
Yeah, it does have very much the sense of just a bit of political backlash, if you will, to things like legalizing same-sex marriage. Then there's another, let's find a new category of people to bash. You write that current research indicates that athletic performance differences are more complex than a simple binary categorization of assigned sex at birth, and that athletic performance varies enormously among individuals within any gender category. And that really gets to one of the things that has really stuck with me, is this ridiculous sense that somebody, a minor or an adult, would go through what you need to go through just to win a race? I mean, I thought it was silly on its face, but I mean, like you said, you had to look into the fact based of it to say between individual variations and simple binary categorization, there's a lot more to this than the surface talking points.
Yes, and it kind of boggles the mind as to why people would think that this is true. I mean, one of my first experiences as a school board member, I've only been on for about a year, a little over a year, was sitting down on a summer learning symposium at a table with a gentleman who was trying to push his facts through and saying things. We can't have these big guys competing against women. And I just looked at him and said, I don't think that's true. And I ended up leaving the table. And it was, and at WASB, the Wisconsin Association of School Board, has always, I mean, this person has been trying to put through policies to change it on a school board level, and WASB has declined, and we as school board members have declined this. So it boggles my mind that WIAA can have this much power. It bothers me. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I mean, there's still a lot to learn about these kind of things, and at best, it should be an individual categorization. I mean,
right. And they are not the only body that is working with this issue. And you note that the International Olympic Committee and other sports bodies have recognized that it's not about transition per se, but the timing of it, particularly where it occurs, you know, in terms of puberty. And certainly we're talking about things like testosterone levels, not simply the fact that there's been a transition or treatment, but again, time, testosterone, a whole lot of other factors that the International Olympic Committee is trying to be cognizant of. And you're concerned that the WIAA is being a little too simplistic about this, I think.
It very. And it's in their policy was just very simplistic. There was no whys or wherefores about it. It was just a very simple statement saying this is the way it is. And I don't think they gave it any thought whatsoever. And it just seems punitive to me and dictatorial. Like I said, I did the research. The timing is important. And the thing is we don't know what's going on in anybody's mind or head or physical things. And it is something that you need to consider personally. I think they're pandering toward the fears of other people who don't have an understanding of what's going on. And frankly, why do we care? I mean, it's really small numbers. And it's important.
Really small. and it just, again, it provides opportunity for talking points, but also, as you note, privacy violations. The current policy, you write, forces families to engage in legal proceedings to secure their children's right to participate, which inherently compromises student privacy. It exposes personal medical information and gender identity status in public legal proceedings, violating the fundamental privacy that all students deserve. Or to put it a bit more crassly, but it certainly has been, so I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before, the fact that some people want to do this is going to mean that a whole lot of other kids are going to be traumatized by either a coach, a school official, a lawyer, somebody. That's kind of They're going to want to look down a kid's pants. What the heck is this?
And when I was meeting with some legislators in aid said that to me, that somebody, a representative said that, well, just check them. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, and as my daughter says to me, she says, Mom, it's weird that these people care so much about children's privates.
Yes.
It's weird.
It is weird. And it hasn't been said nearly enough, but yes. It just is. So let's try to look forward on this. And we're talking to Carolyn Bonanno from Baraboo about this letter she wrote to the WIAA. And you ask the board to consider several things. You write, for example, developing individualized assessment protocols that consider factors such as hormone therapy duration, individual athletic metrics, consulting with medical professionals, sports scientists, LGBTQ+ advocacy groups, and review policies from other states and organizations that have developed more nuanced approaches. I think that's the key word there, is nuanced or individualized or consulting. All of these things sound like best practices moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the world of medicine is, best practices. It is evidence-based. And that should be how everything is. Things should be based on evidence, on what is least destructive or hurtful to other people, and if it's even a necessary thing. You have to look at these things. You don't just willy-nilly. This is how dictatorships happen. Yeah. People just fall in line and nobody says anything. So yeah. I felt it was important to say something.
And so you urge them to refocus the WIAA's mission on supporting and including all student athletes rather than operating as a restrictive enforcement body, return to the core educational mission of fostering student development through athletics rather than creating barriers that force families to choose between their children's privacy and their right to participate in school activities. So that was the note. The letter was dated May 22nd. Has there been any response or reaction since then?
No.
Nothing.
Nothing. I emailed the members individually, and I sent this letter, and I have not heard a thing back.
And it sounds like there's no current plans to reconsider or do anything else on the issue?
Nope.
On the comment sections here from CT, the ban on transgendered student athletes buys into the notion that women are inherently weaker than men, which is ridiculous. And Alicia notes that policies like this do way more harm than good. And I mean, none of this strikes me as so unwieldy that you can't consider a better path forward.
Exactly. But I think that because of the current political-ish system, we have somebody who thinks that he can just tell people what to do without any backlash. And whether you have it or not, he will just do what he wants. And it seems like the WIAA just fell in line. And well, unfortunately, and it's bothersome to me. I'm sorry. It's bothersome to me because I thought that the school boards we're supposed to give guidance to the WIAA, and it doesn't seem to be that way. It seems to be the other way around.
Well, it does. And when you talk about one individual, it certainly is about more than just, say, you know, who is president. Mm-hmm. You have, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who has held up millions and millions of dollars in UW funding to attack diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think, again, I'm projecting, but I wouldn't be surprised if WIAA board members were mindful of that and didn't want the Speaker of the Assembly threatening to cut off funds for high school sports and, you know, being focused on state budgets and school district budgets instead of the welfare of our kids is a hell of a way to run the state.
Exactly. And it seems to be backwards in my estimation, but
well, it certainly does, and that's why I really appreciate your willingness to come on and talk about the note that you sent. I hope you keep us updated, Carolyn Bonanno, as far as whether you get any kind of a response and any possible path forward. Carolyn, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. A local update is coming up next for some of you, and then in our next hour, we will be talking to Earl Ingram about things happening in the Milwaukee area. We will also have Jimmy Koska coming up next for some of you, talking about what he's seen from Southwest Wisconsin, and then an hour later, James Kelly from Northwest Wisconsin, doing the same thing as we do here, mornings, powered by Up North News, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe, all great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Turn your book idea into publishing gold.
800-215-6818. 800-215-6818. That's 800-215-6818.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. The website climate.gov is no more. The site that served as a trusted resource for federal research on climate change has been officially shut down a month after its staff was fired by the Trump administration. When it was online, climate.gov received hundreds of thousands of visitors every month. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says climate information will be housed elsewhere on its website. $16 million in state funding could soon be on the way to help farmers improve water quality in rural Wisconsin. The Joint Committee on Finance recently committed the funding for a host of environmentally minded farm programs. After months of work from Clean Wisconsin and its partners, the funding still needs to be passed by the full legislature and signed into law by Governor Evers. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you know anything about baseball, you know the concept of a utility player who can play a whole bunch of different positions at ease and is not just capable but comprehensive in those positions. That brings up Jimmy Koska, who joins us now, because we are going to talk about we are all over the board in this particular segment. Jimmy, good morning.
Morning. Well, I honestly thought you were talking about Anthony Sigler. So,
We are going to get to the Milwaukee Bucks. We are going to get to the state budget. But because of the work that you do with sports as well, as you've been on a school board, you've been a coach, you're very aware of what the WIAA is doing. So I wanted to give you any opportunity on our last discussion there on the transgender participation policy from the WIAA to give your own insights as to what you've seen being discussed and what the state of things is right now.
Well, I could say that, as someone who follows high school sports, that this was actually brought up during the open session of this April's annual meeting. MMSD, Madison Athletic Director Jeremy Schlitz, actually had a nearly 5-minute statement on trying to reverse the policy. And I mean, he hit on all of the things that you talked about in the last segment about, what this is doing and targeting certain student athletes and just how quickly the policy came about without a whole lot of discussion, things like that. It's a terrific watch. If you could watch it for free on the NFHS website through the WIAA. If you watch the annual meeting, we've covered it here at Civic Media, of course, as well. But it was a really fascinating statement from a school board perspective. Anytime there's any change to things like Title IX, things like that, just in the vein of not wanting to risk losing that bit of federal funding that schools get. It's not a big part of the budget, but in the age of school funding being what it is, any loss in funding would be pretty huge. That's why when the Department of Education talks about eliminating things like title funding, it's huge because that's positions, that services for students. When we get things like a Title IX update, it's mostly a check the box, board vote to go along with whatever it says, right? So as a school board member, there's not a whole lot of discussion you have on it. There's not a lot of local control on a thing like that. But I really do appreciate having that discussion because those sorts of policies that seemingly target just a handful of individuals, like those are pretty important. So.
Yeah, worthy of ongoing discussion here. Let's turn to the state budget, where the agreement does include $194 million for UW Lacrosse to construct the Prairie Springs Science Center and demolish Crowley Hall, which, this is alarming, lacks fire suppression, something Earl Ingram and I have talked about in the past with apartment buildings, but this is a dorm. Failing mechanical systems and so forth, the expansion will support STEM education and workforce development. These are always political footballs in terms of you can only say yes to so many things in any given budget, but this is a pretty nice win for UWL.
Yeah, last budget cycle was UW-Madison and UW-Whitewater getting some capital projects, right? This time it happens to be UW-Lacrosse and a handful of other projects around the state where you have these, multi-million dollar capital projects, these building projects. Eau Claire had one. These are part of the budget process because they are big price tags to take to do these things. So, yeah, for lacrosse, UW-Lacrosse, this is the latest in the line of these projects that have been kicked, the can's been kicked down the road enough times that it just has to be addressed. And, this isn't, you talk about lack of, fire suppression, things like, things in the crumbling infrastructure of some of these buildings. I guarantee if you take a closer look, there's many more examples of things like this in the UW system.
Hey, Pat, you muted yourself.
No, I didn't. I did.
I didn't
see
do
what
it.
Happens when you take.
I was trying to read lips, but it was
slurp
tough.
You take that slurp of coffee, and you just try to be polite, and then boom. I was saying before I so rudely interrupted myself by muting myself that we'll try to get to a couple of news notes if time allows. But I do want to get to all of these changes on the Milwaukee Bucks roster because I don't follow them closely. I just know that from the championship team, there's Giannis and Bobby. And what I'm seeing is that's pretty much it, that there's been quite the turnover. What can you tell us about all of yesterday's moves?
So everything has really been done in just kind of an all-in effort to update the roster to contend this year. There's some talk about, hanging on with Damian Lillard, waiting to see what happens after his injury and taking what essentially would be a gap year where the Bucks just let Giannis run wild and hope for the best this year. Well, that's not been the MO of John Horst and the Bucks front office. They have made a lot of creative moves and a lot of what some people are calling desperation moves to stay in contention. But when you look at the end result of everything that happened yesterday, the Bucks got a lot younger and they put themselves in a position to begin to work to contend right now. There's probably still a move or two away from being a true title contender, but if you look at the Eastern Conference, the representative in the NBA Finals, they don't have Tyrese Halliburton, the Oshkosh North native, tore his Achilles, so he's not going to be available for most of the year. And one of their other top pieces, Miles Turner, well, he's now a Milwaukee Buck. So the Eastern Conference still has some good teams, but you know, you look at it, it's not like there's some juggernaut that you have to overcome. So for the Bucks, it was a matter of making moves to be in a better position to contend right away, without completely mortgaging the future. When you have Giannis Antetokounmpo, you have a shot, right? So you got to build around him and give yourself a shot to win. That's what everything that happened yesterday was all about.
So are Indiana Pacers fans kind of pulling their hair out at losing a player like Miles Turner to the Bucks?
He wanted to stay there with Indiana, but they got lowballed. So the Bucks swooped in and they pick up a great center to pair with Giannis going forward.
All right. And let's get back to one other news note. The Blackhawk Bridge, you say here, is going to stay open all summer. What's the background on that?
So this is a 94-year-old bridge that connects Crawford County, Wisconsin, near DeSoto to Lansing, Iowa. There's a bridge that's replacing it being constructed alongside of it. And in the last year, that 94-year-old bridge has been closed twice for emergency repairs. So this bridge was slated to be closed later this year after July 4th. And the Iowa DOT yesterday said, now they're going to hold off till the end of the summer. It has frustrated people on both sides of the river, business owners especially, because, you know, that uncertain date in the future of when it'll close is going to affect them. But it is good news if you're someone traveling this summer, as now you don't have to detour north to La Crosse or south to Prairie du Chien.
I told you Jimmy Cusco was the utility player for Civic Media, and there he goes, proving it again. Jimmy, thank you so much. Have a great 4th of July holiday. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, man. Take care.
All right. Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, Earl Ingram and Melissa Baldoff. And remember, you can follow my team from Up North News all day long through our newsletters, social media, website, and, of course, here mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A partial verdict has been decided in Sean Combs' trial, but the jury cannot agree on the racketeering charge, so they'll be back at it this morning. ABC's Aaron Katursky with more.
The 8-man, 4-woman jury reached a verdict on 2 counts of sex trafficking and 2 counts of transportation for the purposes of prostitution. But on racketeering conspiracy, the jury wrote in a note, "We have jurors with unpersuadable opinions on both sides." Combs looked shaken, slumped in his seat, wiping his eyes as his lawyers stood around him, his children rushing back to court.
The suspect in the Idaho college student murders will be in court today, where he is expected to change his plea to guilty. Brian Koberger expected to receive 4 consecutive life sentences with no chance of parole. 2,000 flight cancellations on Tuesday because of the weather, most of them in and out of New York and Washington. Some of those affected by the airline troubles, members of Congress who have been called back, the House anyway, to the Capitol to vote on the budget bill. This is ABC News.